With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello there, happy Christmas, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Your Own Personal Beatles. I am Jack Pelling.
And I am Robin Allender here.
Yeah, we only just spoke to you. but we thought as it's the season of giving, we'd offer you another little festive slice of Christmassy Robin's cake. Mm. Seeing as we talked to him for such a long time, there's loads more to bung in there. It's a little bit even more drunk and waffly than the first one.
In the vaults, there is half an hour where John was just talking about his favourite kind of Riesling.
Yeah. And in that, there's lots of great stories too.
I think that's best left on the cutting room floor, isn't it?
Almost certainly. Yeah. there's lots more stuff coming up. Much more. Well, unsurprisingly, more chat about Frank Zappa, Queen, yeah. Bob Dylan, and the Beatles. But we do get on to other things.
Yeah, I was kind of like the idea we were talking about at one point about the idea that whether Queen ever wrote a political song and if that means anything, because I was like. Because John was saying, you know, Queen sort of never did a political song. I think what's interesting about Queen is they did attempt to write about issues, but their sort of music is so ridiculous that it almost negates that intention. It reminded me a bit, I've been listening to Megadeth this week, and they've got a brilliant song called Holy Wars. And Holy Wars is obviously a kind of protest song about, you know, war being very bad. But in the video, every single member of Megadeth has got their top off, which slightly undermines the message a bit.
Yeah, I think we touched on Hammer to Fall, but the subtext of that, I must say, has escaped me over the years.
Yeah. Well, I always thought that was a kind of nuclear protest kind of song, wasn't it, Hammer to Fall? But
apparently so.
Yeah, but you get swept up with the kind of riffs and want to take your top off, so you kind of lose that message, don't you?
I thought it was literally about a hammer.
A hammer, yeah. Well, I thought, remembering the first episode, I thought Piggies was about pigs, so...
Yeah, exactly. We've laughed and learned in 2020.
We do, yeah.
So please enjoy this extra slice. I'm sorry if it gets a little bit waffly, but it's good fun, and if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. We'll see you next year. Thanks so much. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
And a Merry New Year.
So the Beatles songs I like.
Yeah.
So the first song on the first album is I Saw Her Standing There, right?
Yeah, the first song on Please Please Me is I Saw Her Standing There.
Yes. Okay, so I really like that. I feel like the next three albums, they were just trying to remake that song. But so here's an interesting comparison for a song I didn't take to, which is There's a Place, comparing it with In My Room by the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's quite an unfair comparison.
But it's the same song.
In My Room is so sort of haunting and depressing.
Yes. It's heartbreaking in the extreme. And There's a Place, I think, is pretty much a cover of that song where he just talks about being really low and blue a lot and not sounding like he's ever felt sadness, though I know for a fact he did.
Yeah. In My Room is a good example of the thing that I've struggled to articulate on the podcast of how I find it very difficult to even listen to some of Brian's Wilson stuff like that. Because I just find it so sort of sad. And it's so direct.
I've yet to have that wonderful problem with the Beatles, apart from Julia, which I feel in that song like I feel when I'm listening to In My Room, because I know what it's about, and it's just too much almost to bear.
Yeah.
That's what I want from a sad song.
The last time I had that was, do you know the Daniel Johnson song, Some Things Last a Long Time? But that reminds me of when you're talking about in my room. I think the Daniel Johnston song It's like listening to someone's soul. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what Brian. Like, my sister got married a couple of years ago, and she asked me to play at her wedding, which I do quite a lot, which for friends and family. But it's always different when it's someone so close to you, and she asked me to do God Only Knows.
Yeah.
And I said, I literally don't think I can do it because I won't be able to get through the song.
Yeah.
But don't you want that from the Beatles?
I get that from the Beatles.
Yeah, but I don't have that sort of connection with any... No, there's no Beatles... Like, yeah, when I played God Only Knows in the rehearsal and I saw her come in to see how it was all going and I burst into like uncontrollable tears.
Yeah.
And it's like, this song is just magic. There's something about it that just...
But that gets to the absolute heart of what I don't get from the Beatles. Is that particular moment of connecting with a songwriter who may be writing about something completely different from what the song means to you. But that authenticity...
Do you know the song She's Leaving Home on Sgt. Pepper?
I'll check it out.
Because that's the only one that does it to me. Maybe it's the only one, but it's one that I can talk about when I've had a few cans in the pub with a friend and just start crying even though we're not listening to it.
I get that from a lot of Lennon songs. I get it from Strawberry Fields, definitely. Strawberry Fields affects me very deeply. He's channeling something incredibly potent about to do with childhood and memory.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. But yeah, I agree with Julia.
Julia, for sure.
Definitely. Let It Be, actually. I'll say Let It Be is one where...
I once wrote out the lyrics to Let It Be on a... in a very pivotal moment of my life when I bought a girl a dress that she tried on in a shop when I was 14 on the French exchange. And I wrote it out and I left it out. We were in France and I left it outside the door of her French exchange partner. And it was like, it was 80 quid or something in francs. So it was all the money I had for the whole French trip. And she tried it on in a shop called Kokai. And... like we ended up going out and it became this sort of big emblem, this dress. And I'd written them out and I put it on the thing. But then that said, even that, and that is a big, like, emotional memory for me. Yeah. When I listen to Let It Be now, it feels too general. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I suppose that's why they're so successful.
Like, a bit like you were saying about All You Need Is Love. It's like you're trying to... Ian and Robin are both big fans of Will Oldham, and there's something so strange about his lyrics. And sometimes when they're at their most strange, they can be their most universal. But I think if you're writing... lyrics that are very universal, whilst that might mean the song is very, very popular, it just like doesn't click with you, or it doesn't sort of get that hook in you.
But then I think Let It Be is McCartney's Julia in a way, isn't it? Because
it's his song to his dead mother.
Yeah. But... and so I think knowing that is something that connects it. McCartney and Let It Be, I just find it's unbearably moving because... I think, again, this is maybe about knowing the story a bit and just knowing how McCartney was kind of trying to keep people together. And Long and Winding Road is just... I find that really moving. Really, really moving.
But because they're so anthemic, they're sort of... their context is kind of commandeered by the way that they're represented throughout sort of 90s culture. Like, you know, I remember when I first bought... one of the first singles I ever bought was Don't Look Back in Anger. And my mum being like, oh, it's just like Let It Be.
Yeah.
It's like, you're exactly right. It basically is. You know, it's the same sort of anthemic.
Yeah. You know,
even in the same keys, same chords type thing. But it's like, well, you lose ownership of your own song when you write a song like that, which is testament to something like God Only Knows that it still has that power.
So why not just write songs that don't mean anything, like Bohemian Rhapsody? What I love about Bohemian Rhapsody... which is not my favourite Queen song by any stretch, and probably wouldn't even be in my top 10, but I am obsessed with the song and what it's become, because it's become too big for anyone.
But that's the thing I'm kind of trying to articulate about Let It Be. It's like, doesn't exist as what it was written for.
Yeah. Well, it's just amazing how clearly Bohemian Rhapsody is a song about a guy coming out.
Mm.
And it took me about, with every possible hint, took me about 20 years, 30 years maybe, to realise how clear that message is.
Really? I've not considered that before, well, which is
about
mad.
Sort of maternal disappointment and guilt.
About killing a self that you were trying to be. So Mama just killed a man.
Mm.
You know, this is when he was in the process of breaking up with his girlfriend. Mm. And the sort of feeling in that song of being trapped and this huge sort of theatrical personality trying to burst out.
And like religious guilt as well. And sin and stuff. Yeah.
Now, there's no chance on earth that Freddie Mercury sat down and went, right, I want to write a song about coming out and I want it. That's not what happened. But in sort of spite of himself, he's written one of the great confusing anthems.
Confusing anthems.
It is such a mad song. And none of the endless hours of footage and documentary and column inches actually deal with what's interesting about the song.
But that's of course you're right that Freddie Mercury obviously wouldn't sit down and write and think I'm going to write this. But I think that's what I'm getting about why I find Lennon's music so moving is because he is channeling something that's kind of inarticulate with Strawberry Fields. He's trying to express something that can't be expressed.
I don't know a great deal about John Lennon's solo or any of the Beatles solo stuff. But is there a point at which he almost sort of goes beyond the line and it becomes quite sort of self-obsessed?
I think he crossed that line before the Beatles broke up. I think it's probably one of the biggest... You know, he believed the hype of John Lennon.
That's a really good bit. There's a brilliant author, Rob Chapman, who wrote a book called Psychedelia and Other Colours, which came out a few years ago. But the bit about the Beatles... is really good there. Can I just read a little bit from it? This is about acid. Between them, Lennon and McCartney pretty much encompassed the creative possibilities of the LSD experience. Lennon internalising, McCartney externalising. Lennon painting messy mindscapes, McCartney painting domestic murals. Lennon working with large-scale canvases, McCartney crafting immaculate miniatures. Lennon channelling the unconscious, McCartney reportaging the actual... Lennon seeking truth in essentials, McCartney finding it in the incidentals. That's really good, I think. But I think that's, again, that idea that, I don't know, John... It does descend into self-indulgence, where it's this navel-gazing, but his ability to express this unconsciousness is what makes him brilliant, I think.
Next song I like is Girl.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story all about the girl who came to stay? She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl.
Oh, yeah, Girl's good, yeah.
Is that a deliberate inhalation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's meant to be like they were smoking a doobie.
Yeah.
Really?
Kind of.
I thought it was just him sort of going, ooh, she's a nice girl.
Oh, she's a lovely girl.
She's nicer than my wife.
Yeah.
Give me a fact about Girl.
It was meant to be a kind of German-style song in the way that Michelle is a French-style song. It's meant to be a kind of German leader.
Yeah.
Just a little footnote on Taxman. Fair enough, but not enough granular detail about tax policy. Because I don't think it's quite explained what the tax policy was at the time.
We don't know what his threshold was.
It was this famous 95% sort of Harold Wilson... I mean, they do name check the main.
Yeah, but
offenders.
it wasn't an income tax.
What was it?
It was basically a sort of a wealth tax.
Right. Okay.
Unbelievable to write a song about that when you think of that.
Yeah.
When you're remarkable. Really, really. Yeah.
In my life.
Yes.
What a song!
Yeah. Amazing.
Facts, please.
It's not a harpsichord. It's a piano that's sped up.
Okay. Lovely.
It was also the most requested funeral song for many years.
Mine is I Just Want Who Wants to Live Forever, played by a thousand pipers. One thing I learned that I didn't know is that the Byrds, who I think I prefer to the Beatles, started out as a Beatles cover band.
Oh, yeah. Right. I didn't know.
And then the Beatles were then influenced by the Byrds.
Yeah.
In If I Needed Someone.
Yeah. Yeah, the kind of Rubber Soul Revolvers, a lot of Bird stuff. Yeah. There's a lovely version of And Your Bird Can Sing, the one where they're laughing over it, where the guitars are very, very Birdsy.
So very the Byrds nice. Bought, like, just every instrument that the Beatles had when they first started, which I thought was really nice.
That's nice. Mm. You were going to say, what song did you want played at your funeral? Who Wants to Live Forever?
By a thousand pipers.
But I think you'd struggle with the pipers because aren't pipers kind of, they can only play a pentatonic scale.
A thousand pipers.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's quite weird retracing that sort of Beatles influence on late 80s and 90s music when I'm hearing the Beatles song for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
The song called Rain.
Yeah, Rain's amazing, yeah.
Which is essentially from the first Stone Roses album.
Do you think so? Oh, that's interesting.
The bass line at the start of Rain.
Yeah.
It could be on Made of Stone or I Am the Resurrection.
Yeah, very, very
that's a good comparison. Yeah, beautiful, brilliant song.
Yeah, really great. And not on the album.
It's a B-side.
To Paperback Writer.
But it's I always think it's like, once you're told that it's been drastically slowed down, it's very hard not to notice that. I think the voice, it sounds almost like
they all
too...
sound a bit drunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last song I was going to mention, which I really, really love, is Don't Let Me Down.
Oh, yeah.
Never even made it onto an album, really. But
yeah, just from the sort of top of the building gig.
Is that how did you find out about it? Did you watch that whole gig? Or?
It just feels. I'm sure I heard it when I was younger. What albums is it on? Like Best Of?
It's
anything?
On the Blue Album, isn't it?
And it's on the Blue Album.
And Paul McCartney put it on Let It Be Naked, even though it wasn't on.
It's such a good song.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I
so
do,
fun to play as well.
I do really, really love that gig on the top of the Apple building.
Yeah. So Ian McDonald makes a good point in Revolution in the Head that it was kind of, don't let me down, and then Because I Want You, She's So Heavy. Like, they're linked, those two songs. Mm. Don't Let Me Down, Because I Want You, which is a really nice point.
Quick question before we move on to Queen again, because I know Robin wants to talk more about Queen.
Sure.
Do you think that when the baby boomer sort of Beatles there at the time generation are sadly departed, do you think there will be an influence of that on the Beatles reputation as this sort of like untouchable ultimate band.
I don't think it, I really do think, you know, you go to the British Library and you look at the music collection of the manuscripts that they've got, and you start with, you know, Tallis and Bird, and you work your way through Mozart into the Romanticism, and then you realise that they've got scribbled down notes of things like Strawberry Fields and Yesterday. I really think that stuff sits there, like, on merit.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not on merit, but what do you think will happen to the Beatles as this kind of, you know, this sort of head and shoulders above the rest reputation once the people who are there... Because this is a sort of a side Queen point, is that something that brand Queen have been superbly successful at is reinventing Queen for successive generations through projects which one may or may not think have artistic credibility. But you certainly can't deny that there are 10, 12, 15-year-olds now who listen to Queen in perhaps a way that they don't listen to the Beatles, because there is a machine behind Queen's back catalogue which is going, there ain't nothing new coming out, so how do we repackage this again and again and again?
That argument has already happened with the Beatles, and we had it in the 80s and 90s, and we had it with the anthology. As soon as Paul McCartney, God forbid, you know, it's not for another 10 years or so.
God forbid he makes another song.
Well, he's got a new album coming out in a couple of days.
Oh, God.
Well, at least he's not, you know, Ringo touring with Adam Lambert.
Oh, I would love... I mean, I would actually love to see that.
That would be good.
Where do you stand on the sort of Adam Lambert... What was the other guy that they did it with?
Paul Rogers.
Paul Rogers.
Yeah.
It's a big question, Jack, and I'm going to think about it for a requisite amount of time.
I think the Adam Lambert stuff is great because...
I mean, he's a phenomenal singer.
Yeah. Brian May did such a lovely post about his dad. This was a year or two ago, and he sort of realised he was older than his dad. You know, he'd reached an age when he'd surpassed the age when his dad had died. And it was a real kind of milestone. And he just like wrote about how proud he was to still be playing stuff with Adam Lambert. And it's weird. It's sort of, it's very easy to knock, like, why are they still doing it? But it's like, people still love to hear it. Mm. Adam Lambert's got an amazing voice. The songs are amazing. Why not, you know?
Yeah.
I think the way I would approach answering that question is to put yourself in the position of someone who's... career potentially ends and their best friend dies when they are 41 and without doubt were the at the time the biggest band in the world. What do you do if someone said to me you can't do, you know, you can't do comedy anymore, or you can't do any more radio or any more podcasts with Ellis anymore, or any number of sort of things at my age, because I'm approaching the age at which they were when Freddie died, because Freddie was 45.
Was he?
Brian would have been maybe 44, 43. Mm. Roger was 41, 42. John was like 40, 41. So we are the age, almost, at which Freddie died, if we're in Queen.
Yeah.
And...
such a big if, isn't it?
How offensive it must have been, or how upsetting it must have been for them to hear people say, oh, it's not the same without him, you can't go on without him, you can't do this, that, and the other. Because I, as Brian or Roger, would go, what the fuck am I supposed to do? I'm halfway through my life and my friend has died... Are you saying I have no right to continue with my career?
Yeah.
And I've got a back catalogue of some of the greatest songs ever recorded.
We've all written them together. Yeah. A lot of you are there.
And these are collaborative songs. Yeah. So what do I do? What, you want me to just retire and go, yeah, well, when Freddie died, I was 42, so I thought, you've had a good innings, just stop and do nothing. So... as a professional, as someone who works in a creative industry, I am 100% behind anything they do, because you have a responsibility, not just to yourself, but to that sort of legacy of stuff, to keep it going some way. Now, it took a while for them to find a way that worked. I didn't go and see Adam Lambert for a long time because I thought, well, I don't really need to. I don't need that. They can do what they want. And I went to see them eventually at the O2 with Adam Lambert, and it was just mind-blowingly good live experience. Now, as a Queen fan, as someone who would give everything they own to go and see Queen play live as Queen with Freddie Mercury, I wouldn't put it in maybe my top five gigs of all time. However, every single person in that room that night had their mind blown, had a lighting and sort of visual rig set up, which is like so cutting edge. You wouldn't believe what it was like. It was insane. And for 40, 60 quid or whatever it was, you'd go away going, I've absolutely, that is my money's worth and more. So I've changed my opinion of Queen's sort of post-Freddie live incarnations because I just feel so sad that he died when he did. And I have so much understanding of two guys who want something to do, who want to curate that catalogue. I also have a great deal of respect for John Deacon, who went, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, more respect for him. And I kind of meant it in a, like, not so much about the ethical thing of keeping on. I just meant, like, what's it like as a musical experience? But
Well, Adam Lambert is a, like you were saying about Freddie Mercury's voice, Adam Lambert is a better singer than Freddie Mercury if you are talking
about.
I don't have much experience of his studio work.
Yeah, but he's someone who, like a West End singer, can do it night after night.
It's like
But the character of his voice isn't.
His voice has the character of someone who came second in Pop Idol or whatever it was.
Is that what he was?
Yeah.
Oh, is he the American Will Young?
Well, he is. Yeah, that's exactly what he is. His voice has the character of someone who would be the best lead in Les Mis.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Because he can hit every note. He can do that kind of thing.
Really?
Whatever that thing is that didn't exist 15 years ago. When I did the warm-up, I warmed up the crowd for Queen's gig at the New Year's Eve. They did a gig on the BBC. And it was at Westminster City Hall, and I couldn't turn it down as much as I wanted. So Adam Lambert and Queen, I won't talk about my bit because that's what it is, but Queen and Adam Lambert came on and they were great, and then they showed a video of Freddie and his voice coming through, you know, all those speakers, and it's like insane. Hairs on the neck. Just chillingly beautiful. And I at the time thought, why the hell did they do that? Because that shows what character in a voice is. However, up until that point, Adam Lambert had been fantastic. The band had been fantastic. They're tight as hell. So why not give the audience both? Why not go...
But it's interesting, isn't it? 12
tracks with Adam Lambert and a few bits with Freddie. Yeah. And what a great night out.
Well, that's about it from me. I'd just like to say all the best for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
But, Robin, we only got to your first of my Queen songs.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking hell. So the next song was Need Your Loving Tonight. That was shit.
But I see
what you mean. So I think you included that because it's like that's felt like a very kind of contractual obligation kind of song.
Yeah.
Quite fillery. But it's not early rock. It's kind of very soft rock because it's got a kind of quite a chunky guitar riff.
Yeah.
But the lyrics are definitely very much kind of...
I think I described it as, you know, when you watch a film and there's like a good band in the film, but the music that's been written for the band is not good enough for how good the band are supposed to be. That's basically
that's a very good observation.
But yeah, I quite like that. No, but the Jealousy, I loved. I thought Jealousy is a brilliant song.
Jealousy's great.
Oh, how wrong can you be? Oh, to fall in love was my very first mistake. How was I to know I was far too much in love to see?
Yeah, I thought that's fantastic. I've never heard that before, and it's got a very unusual vibe. It's not really like a Queen song. There is a kind of quite late period Lennon thing going on with it.
There's a big Lennon vibe in that song.
Yeah, and he's got his guitar to sound like a sitar. Now, Life is Real on Hot Space, the song for John Lennon, is troubling.
Talk to me.
Well, I thought I was very confused about the lyric where I thought he said, "I've got tossers in my closet." But what's actually saying is, "I've got torsos," which is weirder. He obviously meant, like, "I've got skeletons in my closet," but he didn't scan. Why not just write a new song?
Is there an argument that that song is too real?
It's sort of, it's one of those things where it's like a tribute to John Lennon, but it very, very quickly becomes about a tribute to Freddie Mercury by Freddie Mercury.
I don't think that's the problem with that song, but there is a problem with that song.
What's your problem with it? Life is a bitch.
It's from the album Hot Space, which is Queen's sort of problematic album in terms of, like, it. You know, people think it's a misfire, a misfit. Mm. I think that album is all over the place, but I think the strength of that album is what people think is the failure of that album.
So what are the sort of big hits on the record?
Well, the big hit is Under Pressure.
Right.
Okay. It doesn't get any bigger.
It doesn't get any bigger. It's only Queen's second ever number one.
What was the first Queen number one?
Bohemian Rhapsody. So it's Bohemian Rhapsody, Under Pressure, Innuendo... Well, this is in the UK.
Bohemian Rhapsody again.
Bohemian Rhapsody again.
Yeah. I love Innuendo.
Oh, such a song. Such an album.
What's that noise?
I don't know. It's just doing an innuendo sort of noise. This is like being in the pub.
Killer Queen number two. Bohemian Rhapsody number one. Somebody to Love number two. Oh. We Are the Champions... Double A-sided with We Will Rock You, number two.
That's mental.
Crazy Little Thing Called Love, number two. Under Pressure is their second number one in 1981. Radio Gaga, number two. I Want to Break Three, number three. A Kind of Magic, number three. I Want It All, number three. And then Innuendo. So they had three number ones in three decades. Then Bohemian Rhapsody again. Heaven for Everyone, number two. And then, sort of frustratingly...
You're listening to your own personal veto. Well, like, I went to... So it was obviously the anniversary of John Lennon's death 2 days ago. And I was listening to Life is Real, and I also went back to Moonlight Shadow by Mike Oldfield. And the Wikipedia page... did really make me laugh, because this is the... Can I read you the Wikipedia page from Moonlight Shadow?
Yes, please.
It has been suggested that the lyrics of the song are a reference to the murder of John Lennon, despite the fact that the events in the song do not correspond with those of Lennon's murder. Lennon was shot four times just before 11 p.m, whereas in the song the time is 4 a.m. and the number of shots is six. Also the night, also the night Lennon was shot... 8th of December 1980, it was a new moon, so there was no moonlight. And in the song, it is and in the song it is Saturday night, while Lennon was killed on a Monday night.
Good of Wikipedia. That's fantastic.
Yeah. He was also, that song only reminds me of Dave Angel Eco Warrior from the fashion.
Yeah. God, I'm really pissed now.
Oh, I know.
The final Beatles Queen connection is perhaps the best one, which is that fuck, my head, my brain. Tim Staffel, who was the lead singer in Smile, who left Smile and then Freddie Mercury joined and they became Queen, went on to be a model designer and made all of the trains for Thomas and the Tank Engine.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go.
That's so cool.
That was probably my earliest exposure to anything Beatle-related.
Well, another lovely connection is Kenny Everett produced the Christmas messages. The Beatles did, and then Kenny Everett obviously had a very close relationship with Queen as well, playing Bohemian Rhapsody 5 times in a row, or whatever it was.
9 times.
9, yeah.
He also smuggled Princess Diana out to Soho with Freddie Mercury, dressed in a camouflage jumpsuit in the 80s, so they could have a night out together and no one recognised her. She was wearing aviators.
Really?
Looking forward to that episode of The Crown.
Yeah.
And Freddie Mercury appeared on The Kenny Everett Show.
What was Kenny Everett's punk character called? Wasn't it called, like, Ron Bogey or something?
Well, Freddie Mercury smashes a can on the floor and jumps on him and he falls
over.
Yes,
yeah, that's a fantastic fit, yeah. Sid Snot. What did I say? Ron Bogey.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, yeah.
Close enough. Yeah.
Well, that's 3 hours, 21 minutes.
Fucking hell, sorry.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.